President Biden says the Justice Department is, quote, taking a look at Georgia's new election law. The measure requires voter ID for absentee ballots, limits the use of ballot drop boxes, and gives state officials more power over elections. It also makes it illegal to offer voters food and water as they wait in line. Governor Brian Kemp signed the bill into law last week. Critics are calling it a voter suppression tactic and a legislative power grab. Kemp says it's designed to protect the state's elections.
It's an election security bill that actually increases early voting opportunities on the weekend here in Georgia. Also requires a photo ID for absentee by mail, just like when you vote in person. And it continues to, I think, will allow Georgia to have secure, accessible, fair elections in Georgia.
Meanwhile, Republicans in dozens of other states are looking for election changes in the wake of the 2020 presidential election. This comes as Democrats in Congress work to pass a federal voting rights bill. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about a Republican-led effort to tighten up election laws around the country? Do you think it's a good idea for voting security? Do you worry that it's an act of voter suppression? Do you want to see the federal government pass voting rights protections that would apply to all states? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. David Cannon is a professor of political science at UW-Madison. He's the editor of the Election Law Journal and is affiliated with the Elections Research Center. David, good to have you back on the show.
Good to be with you.
Let's start in Georgia. How big a deal do you think this set of new election laws in Georgia is?
Well, there's no doubt that some of the changes were clearly aimed at trying to suppress the vote in Democratic areas. And so if you look at things like the drop boxes, those are being used more heavily in Fulton County in Atlanta, where Democratic voters are concentrated. With the one that's been getting a lot of attention is the no food or drink for voters waiting in line. And the place where you have lines, of course, is in the urban areas. And so what happens, sometimes you get lines that are 3-4 hours long. People haven't had dinner yet. They get discouraged and they go home. So one way that people try to keep people in line is to go order out pizza and get some food for people waiting in line. And so that's something I think that is clearly aimed at the Fulton County, Atlanta voters as well. And then also things like the voter ID requirement for absentee ballots that before this election, before these changes, that it was just a signature requirement. They didn't have to have a voter ID for absentee ballots the way we do in Wisconsin. And that does have a bigger impact on the voters who are non-white voters are less likely to have a valid state-issued ID that would count as the ID for those absentee ballots. So those are all changes that do seem to be aimed at trying to cut down on the access of more voters who are more likely to lean Democratic.
President Biden was asked what he thinks of Georgia's law. Here's somewhat he had to say.
It's an atrocity. The idea, if you want any indication that it has nothing to do with fairness, nothing to do with decency, they passed a law saying you can't provide water for people standing in line while they're waiting to vote. You don't need anything else to know that this is nothing but punitive, designed to keep people from voting.
That's what President Biden says. But how much does the president or the Justice Department have to say about what goes on in Georgia election law?
Well, so there was a lawsuit filed already just today in U.S. District Court under the Voting Rights Act saying that, if there is an impact on the ability of minority voters to have an equal opportunity to vote, then this could be, parts of it could be struck down under the Voting Rights Act. Now, it seems unlikely that's going to happen, given that the impact would have to be shown typically until they don't stop something proactively. That part of the Voting Rights Act was struck down several years ago in another decision, the Shelby decision. And so now you have to wait to show impact on racial impact on voting before a practice can be struck down. So it's going to be harder to change these laws now that they are in effect. Now, one other thing that should be mentioned, though, about the Georgia laws that hasn't been getting as much attention, there are actually a few changes in the law that really I think are positive changes in terms of affecting voters' confidence in the integrity of the voting process. And in at least in one case, you know, probably making it easier to vote down the road as well. And that one, the one that's going to make it easier to vote is that part of the law says that for any precinct in which the wait time was longer than 1 hour at some point during the day, or if people were still in line for up to an hour after the polls closed, those precincts have to either add more poll workers for the next election, or they have to decrease the size of the precinct to make it a smaller precinct. And so they are, this is for precincts more than 2,000 voters. So that would actually help voter access. They also allowed poll workers to be from adjoining counties. And under the previous law, you had to be from the county you lived in order to be a poll worker. Now, in order to address the shortage of poll workers, they've allowed more poll workers by saying you can be from the adjoining county. So that should help a bit as well. Also, another change I think that's good is that they made absentee ballot requests have to be 2 weeks before the election, because one thing that was happening is people would wait until 1 week before the election, which was the old deadline. And 1 week to request your ballot is not enough time because clerk's offices are overwhelmed. They often would take them several days to get the ballot out. You would get it, and by the time you mailed it in, it would be too late. And so a lot of ballots are being rejected because they were being received after the deadline. And so now by having that deadline to request ballots move from 1 week before the election to 2 weeks before election, I think that also will help voters have a better chance of not having their ballots be thrown out.
Talking to David Cannon from UW-Madison, political scientist there, looking at election law changes in Georgia, others in the works around the country. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there changes you'd like to see in voting here in Wisconsin, big or small? Tell us about it at 800-642-1234. David, in the partisan battle over this, I think, you know, some of these Republican efforts, people are saying, oh, they're an attack on election access, the ability to people to vote. Republicans say, hey, we've got this big problem of fraud that we're tackling here. Are both sides overstating their cases to some extent, or do you think there's some merit on either or both?
Well, there really is almost no basis for the claim of serious voter fraud. That's something we've heard now for the last 10 years or so, that we have this huge problem with fraud, and so we have to, you know, crack down on access to voting. There is really like very, very few cases of voter fraud that have actually been verified over the last 20 years. And so that claim is really baseless. On the other side, with Democrats saying that these changes are across the board leading to voter suppression, you know, some of these changes, as the ones I just mentioned, actually will help the process of voting. And so I think you have to look specifically at what's being done. And I think there are some places where we should see some bipartisan agreement on things we can do to actually either help the integrity of the voting process or to actually make it easier to vote in a way that, you know, would also make sure that more votes are getting counted, like that change I mentioned of making sure that people request their ballot at least 2 weeks ahead of time. That's just kind of common sense. Like, you can't both, you know, have the time for the clerk to fill out the paperwork and mail you the ballot and send it back in within 1 week. That's just cutting it too close. And so there should be some changes like that, I think, that both will, you know, help voter confidence in the process and also improve access to voting.
We're talking about ongoing efforts by Republicans in some states to change election laws and Democrats at the federal level. We'll get to in just a bit. David Cannon is with us, professor of political science at UW-Madison, editor of the Election Law Journal, and affiliated with the Elections Research Center. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think we need to change the way we do voting and elections around the country here in Wisconsin? Would you like to see more federal standards to take out some of the variation from state to state? Or do you think states should remain in control of most parts of how voting works? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Right now we're talking about possible changes in voting laws around the country. Republicans in many states offering changes. Georgia became the latest state to change laws as Governor Brian Kemp there signed several bills into law. David Cannon is with us from UW-Madison, political scientist. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions and changes you'd like to see in voting laws. Were there things that were done kind of in the scramble during COVID that you think worked out pretty well? You want to keep them? Call 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Alicia is with us in Madison. Alicia, hi.
Hi. I was calling because I heard that two conflicting things. One was that you couldn't pass out any food to people at polls. And the other was that you could give it to poll workers who were then able to pass it out. And I was wondering if it's true that you can give food to poll workers to have it passed out. And if so, is that what other states do? And how is this practice then a bad thing? Does that make sense?
Alicia, thanks for the call. I guess I haven't dug into it in that level of granular detail. David, do they specify how food can be passed along?
Yeah, so my reading of the law is that it is a strict prohibition against any food or water of anyone standing in line within 25 feet, in fact, of anyone standing in line. Now, I have seen two different interpretations of the 150-foot limit. One interpretation I read said that if the line is longer than 150 feet, then you can give food and water to the people outside that 150-foot distance. But the other reading, which I think is actually the more accurate, when you actually read the language of the bill, it sounded to me from the language of the bill that you can't even get within 25 feet of anyone in a line of people waiting in line to vote. And that, I think, is the correct interpretation of the law. Now, one thing, though, that also is in the law, which is an important thing, I think, given that some elections in Georgia could, you know, like primaries could happen in very hot weather where people could be passing out if they don't have water, is that it is okay to have a self-serve water fountain accessible to people voting in line. And so it is okay for voters themselves to go up and get some water if you make a water fountain available to them, and that would be okay.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Marty now in Racine. Marty, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Marty?
I was just curious. I forgot his first name or last name for that matter, but I was just curious. So he talked a little bit about, well, I'm not really sure why it would be an issue to bring up to eliminate the ID process in voting. It doesn't sound like it would make the voting process, you know, the integrity of the voting process any better. I think that having a voter ID law for the election is a good idea, being that I need one to drive, I need one to buy alcohol, anything like that, but to actually vote without an ID. I think that in itself produces some integrity. And I'm just curious to see what's the thought process behind not having an ID when it comes to voting, and
gotcha.
Why?
Marty, thanks a lot for the call. So Marty's saying he feels more comfortable with elections with those voter IDs verifying David who's voting.
Right. And certainly that is I think, supported by like 75-80% of the American public would agree with Marty on that it is, you know, I think one of the election reforms that in a lot of states here in Wisconsin, we have a fairly, you know, strict voter ID law that, in fact, now is comparable to what Georgia has. We had a stricter law before than Georgia did. Now, Georgia basically has the same law that we do on voter ID when it comes to absentee ballots, especially. And so the argument saying we shouldn't have to have a voter ID is that there are up to about 10% of eligible voters who don't have a state-issued ID that qualifies for an ID for voting. And so that provides then a serious obstacle to voting. Now, States do have to provide a free ID to people who can't afford an ID. But that is, and that's again another hurdle for people to overcome. They have to go get the ID, you know, first, and then they have to register to vote. Because previously, you just had to show proof of residence. You could bring like a utility bill or a bank statement or something else that had your address. And that for many years, so up until about 4 years ago in Wisconsin, that's all we needed to vote was just to be able to show proof of residence. We didn't have to show a photo ID when we could vote. To be able to vote. And you could even have a neighbor vouch for your residence if you, you know, didn't have paperwork with you. And so it is harder to vote now in Wisconsin because of that voter ID requirement. But that is the big concern, is you have up to about 10% of the population that actually doesn't have an ID. So for those of us who do have an ID, it's not an inconvenience. But for someone who doesn't, it could basically disenfranchise them. And it is minority voters, younger voters, and some elderly voters. For example, if you're in a nursing home, you don't have a driver's license anymore, you might not have a valid state-issued ID. And so there are people who, it is an inconvenience if they don't have an ID, and it could prevent them from voting.
Thanks for that call. We are talking to David Cannon, political scientist at UW-Madison, about changes in the works in states, maybe at the federal level, in the way we vote. Back to your calls now. Gary is with us in Strum. Gary, hello.
How you doing?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Gary?
My thing is I think really it should be the standard across all states, not, changing rules within states. I think everybody should have a ability to vote and have enough time to get everybody voted. Because if you're limiting voting in any way, I guess as our population grows, we don't, really are not making accommodations for that. So I think really all states should be really under the same kind of voting regulations rather than having everybody changing their rules to fit their needs.
Gary, thanks for the call. David, why don't we have federal standards and decide things at the state level?
Well, yeah, Gary makes a really good point. This is something we're having a lot of debate about in Congress right now, because the House passed H.R. 1 a little while ago, which was a national voting rights bill that would apply to the entire country in ways that would provide more access to voting by increasing access to mail-in voting. It would make Election Day itself a national holiday. It would provide access to same-day registration the way we have here in Wisconsin, make that available in every state. And I think most significantly, make for automatic voter registration. And that last one actually is a good example of something that seems like both Democrats and Republicans should be able to get on board on. Because if you have automatic voter registration, it helps address one of the Republicans' big concerns in previous elections, which has been the integrity of the voter files themselves. Because people do move away from the state, people die, and you need to keep the voter rolls up to date. And so if you have automatic voter registration, it makes that process much easier than it otherwise would be. So it both helps the integrity of the voter rolls, and it provides easier access to voting.
As you said, that election, that federal election law passed in the House, but it might not in the Senate. What have been the objections to it?
Yeah, so the Senate, it looks like it really doesn't have much of a chance as long as the filibuster is in place. Because, with a filibuster, you need 60 votes to stop a filibuster. And it's not even entirely clear you'd be able to get all of the 50 Democrats to support this, but you might be able to. But some of the objections are on things like requiring nonpartisan redistricting commissions in every state. A lot of the Republican senators don't want to do that. Also, the easier access to mail-in voting. That became a real sort of partisan issue in this last election, where the mail-in voting was used much more heavily for the first time, really, to have a huge partisan difference in mail-in voting. But Democrats were much more likely to vote by mail in 2020, whereas Republicans were much more likely to vote in person on election day. And so any effort to increase mail-in voting is seen as a, as Mitch McConnell calls it, a partisan power grab, basically. And so this is something that is unlikely to pass the Senate in the current form.
All of these changes we're looking at, and there are a lot more in other states that we haven't talked about as much, do they just affect overall voter turnout on either side around the margins? Or do you think there are states, close states like a Georgia or a Wisconsin, where tweaking the rules a little could sway, especially statewide elections?
Well, yes. I mean, I think that especially when you look at a really close state like Georgia, there's no doubt that these changes could potentially affect the results of a statewide election. And then one other aspect of the Georgia changes that we're seeing in some other states too, like in Arizona, they've proposed changes along these lines, is not just changes in access to voting, but also changes in control over the election process, and especially over the administration of elections. So one thing that happened in the Georgia law is they sort of diminished the role of the Secretary of State, who had been the top election official and chaired the state election board there. You might remember the Raffensperger, the Republican Secretary of State, the one that kind of stood up to Donald Trump and said, hey, we had a secure election here. And we had two recounts, full audit. You lost, President Trump. And Trump supporters didn't like that. So they downgraded the power of the Secretary of State in Georgia as a consequence. And they also took over a review ability over the county election officials, which the state election board had not had that power before. So there's concern that you could add a partisan element there, you know, where, say, Fulton County, which votes heavily Democratic, you now have the state election board that would be able to oversee that county board, or that county election process, which you haven't had before. So that's a bigger issue, I think, where it's not just the access to voting, but it's actual control over the process of counting votes as well, and how votes will be reported.
Briefly, do you worry about that? I mean, we saw a lot of pressure, not just in Georgia, but Michigan and elsewhere, to impose outside forces on the counting of the vote. Is that something that could be a problem just in our last 30 seconds in the future, David?
It potentially could be. I mean, one thing that I took great confidence in from the 2020 experience was the fact that the court stepped up and prevented that kind of thing from happening. You know, that they really did play their role of an independent judiciary that prevented state legislatures from trying to step in and take some power over the process. And so one would hope that that same kind of judicial restraint will be in place if state legislatures try to go too far in taking power.
David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome. Good to be with you.
David Cannon is professor of political science at UW-Madison. He joined us for a look at election overhaul bills in Georgia and elsewhere.